www.annieecasey.org and the Annie E. Casey Foundation.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loray. Coming up, we're going to hear Florida this week from this past Friday night. We're going to talk about what's going on in the state legislature. Also, that mystery about which Florida county was targeted by the Russians for hacking during the 2016 election. We'll talk about that in a moment. First, one listener comment that came in, not so much about last Friday's program, but more it's a community announcement. So here's one listener comment that came in over the weekend.
Terry from St. Pete. I just wanted to let your listeners know about an event that's happening on Wednesday, May 1st at 7 p.m. It's at If I Brewed the World. That's a brew pub at 2200 First Avenue South in St. Pete. The Democratic Socialists of America are going to be having a great May Day celebration. They're going to be having a labor trivia quiz, a 50-50 raffle, music, and our special guest speaker will be Ed Bruno, former National Organizing Director of National Nurses United. It's going to be a great time. Hope everybody can make it 7 p.m. at If I Brewed the World. Thanks.
A listener comment that came in over the weekend. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. I'm Rob Loray. Thanks for tuning in. Right now, we're going to hear the audio for a television program that I host called Florida This Week. We'll hear a discussion about some of the big issues going on in Tallahassee as the legislature gets down to its last week up there doing its legislative business. And later on in this program, we'll open up the phone lines, too, and take your phone calls. You can email the studio here and comment about anything you hear here for the next 25 minutes or so. You can email the studio by using this address. It's dj at wmnf.org. Here's Florida This Week from this past Friday night. Coming up next, Tampa gets a new mayor who is grabbing some national attention. Florida is on the verge of vastly expanding its school voucher program. A tough version of the Amendment 4 implementing bill passes the State House. And top state officials want a briefing from the FBI over the part of the Mueller report that says that Russia tried to hack into Florida's election systems. Political Insights next on Florida This Week. Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Joe Henderson is an independent journalist. Dan Meduri is the host of the Dan Meduri Show on AM 820 WWBA. Ione Townsend is the chair of the Hillsborough County Democratic Executive Committee. And Akash Patel is the founder and president of Elevate Incorporated and a Republican. So nice to have you here. Great to see you.
Thank you. See you.
Well, Tampa's former police chief, Jane Castor, swept to victory Tuesday in the runoff race for Tampa mayor. Castor defeated philanthropist and retired banker David Straz by a wide margin, almost 50%. She becomes the first out lesbian to run a major city in the Southeast. Some national figures took notice of the milestone, including presidential candidates Cory Booker and Peter Buttigieg, who called to offer their congratulations. So did Governor Ron DeSantis. Turnout was low. Only 23% of eligible voters cast a ballot. So, Ione, what does the Castor election mean, do you think, for the city of Tampa?
Oh, I think it reinforces that Tampa is a diverse community and that we embrace diversity, and that diversity includes people of all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this going to be more of the kind of administration that we saw under Bob Buckhorn, given that Buckhorn was a big fan of Jane Castor's?
I think that her intention is to preserve some of his policies or continue with some of his policies, but I certainly hope that she puts her own stamp on her tenure in this office. And I think she's got wonderful opportunities to do that.
And Joe, that's what people are wondering. What will her stamp be? Will she differ significantly from Bob Buckhorn, or will it be a continuation of what he did with, I think it's fair to say, an emphasis on downtown?
Yeah, and she's got a lot of things on her plate right off the bat. Transportation is a huge issue. She's already waded into the debate about where Rays Stadium should go. She says she believes it can and should be in Tampa. That kind of surprised me, to be honest with you. That's something you might have rolled out a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But she'll be her own person, and you know, she will not. She's not Bob Buckhorn. You know, she's not as dynamic a speaker as he is. She's not as bombastic as he can be. I say that in a good way. But she is very solid, very capable. She will be a steady hand on the wheel.
And Akasha, a lot of the national press looked at this and said, well, you've got a gay mayor in Tampa. That says something about the diversity within the city of Tampa.
Yeah, I'm a Republican. I supported her in her first, when the first election, and then the runoff, of course. But, I mean, she's a genuine person, like Joe said. I mean, I supported the business person. I supported the woman who came and talked about innovation and startups and entrepreneurship. The gay factor wasn't really a factor in the race at all. And I think on MSNBC the next day she mentioned that. And I hope that people see her as a mayor and a leader, not as just a lesbian.
And Dan, what do you think of the Castro election?
I think that it's just speaks to her testament as a pragmatic, diligent leader in her leadership. I mean, don't forget, this election started out months and months ago, and she leapt out to the front and never relinquished that. She almost won it outright on election night. There was almost not even a runoff. 6 weeks after that, the runoff, she won 73% of the vote. She forced David Straz to spend over $5 million. He completely humiliated himself. I mean, it was just a total outrage that she was able to body slam him the way he was. Frankly, he should go take some time in his Wisconsin home, leave the city of Tampa, lick his chops a little bit. And also, it was a reinforcement of who she is as a character, who she is as a candidate, and it had nothing to do with anything else. And it's almost unfortunate that we have to have that discussion.
Ione, people are astounded by the amount of money that David Straz spent on this campaign. Some people are questioning whether, you know, he really needed to spend that much money. What's your take on all that money that David spent to lose the campaign?
Well, in the end, you know, I think what the voters noticed was that Jane was focused on the issues. They bought into her vision. She's all the things that everybody has said that she is, and people identified with that. And I think it just proves that issues, character, and vision trumps money.
And also to remove the idea of just the anger, hatred, a seat that can't be bought. Frankly, I hope that there's a campaign launch to remove Straz's name off the Performing Arts Center. I don't think it has any business being up there anymore, and I hope that that's an initiative that Castor loyalists will, in fact, put forward.
But why would you do that? I mean, the guy has given so much money to the city and been a real philanthropist. And before this, I think his name was gold, wasn't it?
Yeah, the University of Tampa, he's been a big benefactor, and there's a dorm named after him there.
Yeah. But you would take his name off the street?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think that you want to continue to have these ideas of false idols and these ideas of people who are inhumane and anger and purporting rage out there rather than showing the diversity and the close-knit community and the intimate community that City of Tampa is. I think that if you're going to run a race like that, if you're going to go that direction, then you have to pay the consequence. And the consequence and the exacting of a pound of flesh politically would be name off Performing Arts Center.
Well, that's tough, I would say.
I think he paid the price by losing the race,
Joe,
and all that money.
But people are wondering. I mean, Straz did spend a lot of money on this campaign, and this is one of those cases where all the money in the world can't buy you an election.
Well, first off, let's just call it like it is. His campaign, the advice he got was horrible. I don't know why he listened to it. I don't know why he didn't fire his campaign staff halfway through the general election season. It wasn't working. He always thought, well, if I can get in the runoff, I'll be okay. But here's the problem. He never understood the office he was running for. Jane Castor is a fixture in this city on the police force 31 years. People know her. People like her. And they're happy with the direction the city's going. Polls have shown that. What David Straz was trying to say is, no, you're not happy. Yeah, we are. No, you're not. And Jane Castor's the reason why you're not happy. That was a really dubious message.
One last question. Does it say anything? I mean, this is pretty typical of a Tampa City runoff race. Only 23% of the people voted who were eligible to vote in the race. Does that say anything about...
sad.
Yeah,
you know,
it really is
that we thought we'd be excited to see a new mayor, and and only 20% voted in the first election. It's just, I think there's just, we just need to get the word out better and get more people.
Doesn't
inspired.
It speak to the shared dominance of the Castor campaign, though, to a certain degree? I mean, everybody that I talked to basically said, well, she's going to win anyways. There's no point for me to vote. If it was close, I'd vote. There's no reason for me to vote. She's going to win in a landslide, and she did that.
All right. Well, Florida's on the verge of creating a new school voucher program under a bill passed by the Florida Senate. The Senate voted this week to create so-called family empowerment scholarships, which would spend taxpayer money to send students from lower-income families to private schools at a cost of about $130 million to taxpayers. Democrats opposed the bill, saying it would divert money from public schools to send them to schools that are not held to the same accountability standards. But Republicans say the bill also gives school districts money to recruit and retain teachers, as well as money targeted to help struggling schools. The new voucher program would be capped at 18,000 students in its first year. The bill is a priority for Republican Governor Ron DeSantis. A similar measure is being considered in the House.
Joe, is it a good move to expand and use Florida tax money to pay for private school vouchers?
No.
Why not?
Because the public school system in Florida is under siege. Budgets are being strained to the max. We see stories every year in Hillsborough County about broken air conditioners, buildings falling apart, so on and so forth. Maintenance having to be delayed because they don't have the money. So we voted to tax ourselves for it. Guess what? Then they come along and say, well, we should send some of that money to charter schools. You know, that was not the intent of that thing. What they're trying to do, I believe, and I've always believed this, is it's a backdoor way to attack teachers' unions. Because I believe Tallahassee has a mindset in the legislature that the real problem is the unions, because they won't go along with everything those people say. So this is just the latest incarnation of that.
Akash, is this an attempt to attack teachers' unions by spreading more money to private schools?
I don't believe so. I think it's about quality education. Every child deserves a quality education, whether you know you're in kindergarten or in 11th grade. And I think the opportunity now for children to go through, whether it's charter schools or other schools that this voucher program is proposing, I think it's a good thing.
Is there the capacity, Dan, in the private school system to take in an additional 18,000 students?
There could be if they start getting more money from Tallahassee. But frankly, when you look at the public school system here in the state of Florida, it's been just decimated. Under the Rick Scott administration, it went from a top five education ranked nationally to now it's like 32nd. Also, you look at price per student, the investment's just not there. Something like 94% of all kids in the state of Florida are educated in public schools, and yet we keep pulling resources away from them to create voucher programs in private schools. It doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't.
Well, I own the argument is that if parents have a choice, they'll be able to take their kids out of low-performing schools and put them into a private school. And the argument also is that this creates competition for public schools, and the public schools get better because they want to compete for those students. What do you make of those arguments?
Well, it's not competition because the playing field is not level. The standards for the teachers are not the same as they are in public schools. And a lot of the standards just aren't the same. So it's not a level playing field. I think this will be challenged in the court. I think this will brush up against the 2006 Supreme Court decision. And so I think we're going to hear a lot more about this.
Teachers say that they're underpaid in the state of Florida. We're near the bottom when it comes to teacher pay. Yeah. Does this help with the teacher pay issue?
No,
is the legislature doing anything?
I think Dan is right. It's going to lower their per pupil spending, and that affects teacher pay.
Joe, one of the other things the legislature is on the way to is allowing counties to decide, or local school board districts to decide, whether or not to arm teachers. It's a voluntary program. What do you think?
Well, I think that all districts should opt out of that, because the last thing you need in a crisis situation like that is a teacher who may have gone through a few hours training and all of a sudden you are the line of defense. Teachers are brought there to teach. They're not there to be security guards, you know? And this notion that a teacher is going to be cool under fire and just go out there and is crazy. It will be chaos.
And some local counties have opted out Polk and Manatee. Akash, what do you think of this?
It's not just a few hours. You know, it's 144 hours, and you have to go through testing, and it's significant. And again, they're allowed the option of carrying the weapon. Right now, certain guardians can already do it, and that's what the legislature passed last year. Mm-hmm. And I think, as a Sheriff Grady Judge said recently, I mean, this is the world we live in. We have to be, it's unfortunate. I don't remember, I went to public school and I don't remember my teacher having to worry about our safety, but times have completely changed.
Why do we worry about this? What's going on in the larger society that makes us worry that some gunman's going to come into the school?
Mental health issues.
It's mental health? Is it guns?
I see, every case we've had so far has been a mental health issue. You know, I mean,
it's
guns are
definitely... You don't call it a gun issue.
I don't think the guns were involved, but I think the person or the group had some sort of issues with society.
Akash, hold on. Let me jump in for 1 second. You mentioned Grady Judd. Jane Castor, the new mayor of Tampa, opposes that idea. Mm-hmm. The teachers throughout the state who are actually in the classrooms oppose it. Why are they doing it? The Republicans are doing this because they can, and because they think guns are the solution to every problem. You don't solve a problem of too many guns by adding more guns.
Wait, but when I look at safety, I look at even Sheriff over in Pinellas County, Gauthier, you know, he's for this. And the reason is they know how to protect our citizens.
Dan, what do you think? I mean, is it that we have mental health issues, or is it that we have too many guns available to people that shouldn't have guns?
It's probably a perfect blending of both. I mean, I go back to this idea of the concealed weapons permit. You know, 2 million Floridians have concealed weapons permits, and whenever you have 2 million of anything, a certain percentage of that's going to be bad people and people who are just deranged and in their own right. But I go back to the teachers being armed, and I just think to myself, I mean, it's you have teachers who are being paid $12,000 less than the national average of teachers across the country, and then you're going to offer them a financial incentive to be armed into the classroom and take on this extra responsibility. Does that then mean that these teachers then have a duty to engage an active shooter if they are on campus because you're being paid to do so, are you not? I mean, I think you look at it and it's outrageous. I mean, that'd be the equivalent of like President Trump saying, you know what, Ivanka, you are a senior advisor, but I also want you to be my Secret Service agent too. I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't add up. And think about the temperament of the teacher that is to heal people, to help people, to further people, to be a mentor to people. It mentally, them pulling out a gun and going Dirty Harry, it doesn't fit. It just doesn't fit.
All right. Well, the Republican-controlled Florida House passed a bill this week to implement Amendment 4. It would restore voting rights for ex-felons on the condition that they first pay all fees, fines, and court costs before they can head to the polls. Republicans say the fees are part of an ex-felon sentence and are thus mandatory. Democrats and opponents of the bill argue that the measure goes beyond requiring completion of sentence and disenfranchises people from voting. They say the bill ignores the will of the more than 5 million Floridians who supported the statewide referendum. In November, Florida overwhelmingly approved the constitutional amendment to restore voting rights to felons who complete their sentences, except murderers and sex offenders. It could grant up to 1.4 million people the right to vote, but now the number of possible new voters is in doubt. So, Dan, was it the intention of Florida voters to make everybody pay their court costs in addition to completing their sentences?
I don't think it was the intention of Florida voters, no, but I also think that that's what happens when you start getting into the granular details of any individual issue or any individual subject matter. It is something that would bubble up to the top, and some of these people, I mean, they owe millions of dollars. So what are you supposed to do, just wipe that off and not sit there and hold them accountable when it comes to voting? I don't think it's necessarily a Democrat or Republican issue. I know both sides are kind of jostling towards that. Senator Brandis of Pinellas County has called it a conservative issue. I know Democrats have talked about this idea that it does in fact hurt certain people from certain communities if you do not allow them to vote. I just think it's a human issue. I think that if they've served their time, if we believe in the idea of them coming back and being bona fide members of society, they should be able to vote. And we're working through the nuances of that subject.
Akash, are the limits that the legislature is moving forward with, are they necessary?
I mean, it's the Constitution. I mean, Representative Jamie Grant said in one of his interviews, I mean, this is a constitutional issue. Everyone should be treated fairly, and I'm all for second chances. I want people to vote. I mean, if they're eligible and they did their time, let's let them vote. But they have to pay their fine and clear their debt to society.
Mm-hmm. What about court costs?
I think the court costs, they have to pay that too.
Okay. Even though they weren't mentioned in the amendment itself.
It's like Dan said, it's a great granular. I mean, think if people read that, they would still vote the same way, right?
Right. Okay. What do you think, Ione? Is the legislature doing the right thing?
I don't think the legislature has any business getting involved in this. I think that those of us who voted for that amendment, we knew what we were voting for. Mm-hmm. And I think the amendment was crafted very, very carefully. It specifically excluded court fees and costs. That's not part of a sentence. Anything the judge imposes is part of the sentence. Anything anybody else imposes is not part of the sentence. And that was what Amendment 4 meant. So I think your setup of this was, I love the picture that you showed with everybody with the mask on. I mean, what the Florida legislature is doing in getting involved in this is refusing to listen to the will and the voice of the voters, and that's unacceptable.
Joe, what do you think? The legislature is getting involved. The people that wrote the legislation said it was self-enacting. You didn't need to have implementing language passed by the legislature.
Well, I think history shows us the legislature has never, if there's a way to subvert the will of the people on amendments like this, they will figure it out. And I just wonder that if the Republican-led legislature thought the majority of these newly franchised voters would vote Republican, if this would even be an issue.
All right. Well, the FBI will soon meet with Senator Rick Scott and Governor Ron DeSantis to discuss the agency's suspicion that Russians hacked into at least one county elections office in Florida during the 2016 presidential election. The suspected hacking, made public last week in the report from Special Counsel Robert Mueller, has alarmed Florida officials who previously insisted that Russian hacking efforts had been unsuccessful. The brief mention of the hacking in the Mueller report was a surprise to both state and local elections officials. When incumbent Senator Bill Nelson, a Democrat, made a similar assertion last year, Scott assailed him on the campaign trail, demanding proof and calling the comment irresponsible. Scott, a Republican, and the governor at the time, unseated Nelson in November. While Russian attempts to access county elections offices in the 2016 election had been previously publicized, state officials, including those who reported directly to Scott at the time, had maintained that none of the efforts were successful. So, Akash, I think it's fair to say that Governor DeSantis and Senator Scott were caught off guard by this mention in the Mueller report. They feel a little bit blindsided. They want to know, did the Russians get in, and which county did they get into?
I think we all want to know that. I think we were surprised when we heard Secretary Clinton say that at the time when Hunter met this week. I mean, yes, Senator Nelson
Clinton claimed that every county was breached by the Russians, and nobody is saying that.
I mean, Secretary of State Laura Lee, she said that's not impossible. And so maybe we're not privileged to the information, but I hope that this knowledge, this meeting next week with with Senator Scott and Governor DeSantis will find out. But if that's scary that we're it's taken two years to figure this out.
Now, during the campaign, when Bill Nelson brought it up, Joe, it was downplayed by the Republicans. But there seems to be at least something to it. We don't know which county, but apparently, according to the Mueller report, they were able to get into one county's operations. Now, they didn't get into the voting machines. Nobody's saying that. But they may have gotten into the first line of computers.
Well, the real issue, I believe, is not what happened in 2016, it's what might happen in 2020. And this should be a 9-alarm fire right now up in Tallahassee and in the voting districts all across the state. This is real. These guys are doing this, and they are subverting our elections. They are attacking us. And, you know, maybe there isn't smoke and bombs and stuff like that, but they are trying to destroy America.
Dan, do you think that we'll be prepared in the 2020 election, the big elections coming up?
Well, it will be interesting to see. I mean, we've done nothing but gobble about it since it took place in 2016. And, you know, I've heard all this conversation about it just nationally, internationally. And I'm wondering to myself, who's actually trying to prevent these guys from doing this? Because it just seems like maybe nothing is happening behind the scenes. Maybe it is. I don't know. We just don't know. And we don't know what we don't know. And the fact of the matter is that meddling in elections happens all the time in all elections. We do it. Other countries do it. We just have to stop them from doing it. And so this idea of, you know, should they stop it? Should they knock it off? Yeah, probably. But they're not going to. So we got to stop them from doing it. I mean, it's that basic.
All right, so, Ione, we know that the Russians are probably going to try again.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So do you think that we're up for it? Do you think that the state of Florida...
No, we're not up for it. I mean, the Trump administration... The Trump administration still has not admitted that has gone on. Matter of fact, President Trump said he believes Putin. So, you know, if from the top we're not considering this a serious problem, then we've got a serious problem all the way down to our level.
Akash, what would you say back from the Republican side? Do you think the president's taking this seriously now?
I mean, everyone's taking every election seriously, but the issue is we don't know what the real issue is, and I think that's the problem we're having. And someone does. We're just the public's not being told on purpose.
Mm-hmm. And there was also that report that came out after the midterms that we knocked up Russia completely offline going into the midterms. So we basically put them in timeout. They had no ability to effectively hack us from the Kremlin or Moscow or whatever was going down, because because we knocked them offline. So that could be just the preventative measures in which we do. We just turn off their internet.
All right. Well, before we go, what other news story should we be paying attention to? And Dan, let's start with you. The other big story of the week.
I don't know if it's a big story of the week, but it's a personal observation. I was out jogging on Bayshore. People still driving on Bayshore 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, treating it like a highway. I would say slow down. It's the scenic route. People are out there with their kids. They're out there with working out. They're out there with their grandparents. They're enjoying themselves. And a woman gave her life, and her 21-month-old baby gave her life because two idiots decided to drag race on it. We made superficial changes to Bayshore. We didn't make any real changes to Bayshore, and people are already back to abusing it, even though it hasn't even been a year since she lost her life.
Sounds like a job for Jane Castor.
Does.
Akash, your other big story.
It does, and that's my story. Mayor Jane Castor gets inaugurated on Wednesday along with four of the city councilmen. It's a new day. It's all-male city council, and we have a new mayor, female mayor. We haven't had a female mayor in 8 years. I think it's going to be a great day for Tampa. It's going to see a lot of change, and it's going to be looking forward to the first 100
what
days.
What about that all-male city council?
I think they're going to have a lot of time getting to work together. It's going to be a while before they work together. They all have different personalities, and they all ran different races. A couple of them didn't have much competition. A couple had really tight races.
Ione, your other big story.
I think we this is a takeoff on Amendment 4 and interfering with Amendment 4. I think we need to take a look at what citizens are doing with Medicaid expansion, the assault weapons ban, and the minimum wage. Again, you know, the citizens are coming forward with their own initiatives because the Republican-controlled Congress continues not to hear them.
The legislature is going to try to make it harder this year to amend the Constitution.
Bring it up to 67%.
In the future. Huh? All right, Joe, your other big story.
Well, I'm watching something go on up in Tallahassee. The legislature seems to be edging toward maybe toughening up the distracted driving law, where they could make it a primary offense where an officer could pull you over and ticket you if he catches you, you know, texting or on your phone. I saw a driver today driving like this, looking at her phone. And
scary.
It's dangerous, and this has been up for years, and they keep managing not to do it. Let's hope they take it over the finish line this time.
So you want them to do it?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you all for a great show.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftw@wedu.org.
Well, that was Florida This Week from this past Friday night, and it's on the PBS station in Tampa, WEDU-TV. And my guest on that panel, Joe Henderson, was one of the journalists on the panel. Dan Maduri hosts a show on a local AM radio station. Ion Townsend is with the Democratic Party in Hillsborough County, and Akash Patel is with the Republican Party in Hillsborough County. And we talked about the election of Mayor Jane Castor, school voucher expansion. And we also talked about the Russian hacking, supposed hacking into some election supervisor's office here in Florida. We're not sure which county that took place, but the FBI is soon going to tell our top elected officials about that in the next few weeks. And also the efforts to curtail the impact of Amendment 4 here in Florida. Now, Adam writes this. He says, I'm so sick of the media and Republicans trying to downplay the Russian hacking by saying no votes were changed. You don't need to change votes if you can delete someone's information or alter it or do other things. It's extremely disingenuous to act like an election cannot be influenced if the votes weren't physically changed, writes Adam. So that's Adam's email comment. We don't know whether or not people were prevented from voting as a result of the Russian hacking. We just don't know where it goes. So we'll find out. We hope soon. We hope that the governor and the newly elected U.S. Senator, Rick Scott, will tell us once they come out of the meeting with the FBI. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. I'm Rob Lurie. We're going to open up the phone lines now and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. I want to talk about the shooting over the weekend in California at the synagogue and ask you a question after I read something that was posted on the Daily Beast this morning. This is their account, one of their accounts. There's a lot of good reporting on the Daily Beast website about the shooting at the synagogue. But I want to ask you something after I read a few paragraphs from this story. And again, our phone number is 813-239-9663. And you can email the studio here at dj@wmnf.org. Here's what the Daily Beast reported just a few hours ago. 19-year-old nursing student John T. Ernest, who was charged with murder Sunday as the lone gunman in the deadly Poway synagogue shooting, played piano for hours a day and earned a 4.31 grade point average. His father was a church elder whom neighbors call the sweetest man. But somewhere on his path, Ernest took a terrible turn, claiming Adolf Hitler as an idol and writing what appears to be his own rambling manifesto that Jews deserve nothing but hell. He wanted to be the one to, as he put it, send them there. Police say someone purporting to be him posted the anti-Semitic, Islamophobic, white supremacist manifesto, which eerily mirrored the Q&A style that the Christchurch, New Zealand terrorist Brendan Tarrant used in his own pre-massacre diatribe about 20 minutes before he walked into the Poway synagogue with an AR-15-style assault rifle and started shooting, killing one woman and injuring three others before the gun malfunctioned and he was chased out by an armed security guard. Ernest was arrested by police a few minutes after the shooting as he fled, called 911, and told them where to find him off an exit on a California highway, authorities said. As an officer approached, he exited his vehicle, raised his hands, and surrendered. A rifle was recovered from the car. He's scheduled to be arraigned on Wednesday on one count of first-degree murder and three counts of attempted first-degree murder, according to the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. In his online posting, Ernest championed the likes of Robert Bowers, who fatally shot 11 people at the Tree of Life synagogue shootings in Pittsburgh exactly 6 months ago. Tarrant, who killed 50 people in the New Zealand mosque in March, and he compared himself to Hitler. He championed the likes of Hitler. This shooter on Sunday used mainstream social media like Twitter and the fringe message boards 8chan and what has become a proven way for terrorist groups and lone wolves alike to ensure that propaganda is disseminated to both those looking for it and those who are not. He posted the original screed on pastebin.com and mediafire.com and linked to them on 8chan. Like Tarrant, he promised to live stream his killing spree, which he evidently failed to pull off. Facebook immediately removed the profile link he intended to use, but had somehow not seen the warning signs when he created the page. Sheriff William Gore of the San Diego County Sheriff's Department said during a press conference late last night that authorities were carrying out searches in the suspect's home and looking into digital evidence and checking the authenticity of an online manifesto. If it's validated as authentic, the student, who was previously unknown to police, found footing in the usual tenets of hate and the now all too familiar desire for infamy. So my question to you, and again, the phone number 813-239-9663, is the federal government doing enough to investigate people that post things on websites like 8chan and seeing whether or not they have a potential for causing harm? Do you think that the federal government is doing enough to look at right-wing people online who have the potential for carrying out violence? What do you think? If you were listening to Democracy Now! Today, Amy repeated this. That's well known. We've talked about it here on Radioactivity, that the agency that was responsible for investigating right-wing terrorism in the U.S. was disbanded by President Trump more than a year ago. The guy who headed that department was let go. So do you think that we do enough to pay attention to right-wing violence in the U.S.? Because there certainly is a large amount of it. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. Clint writes this regarding teachers with guns. Clint writes, in an active shooter situation, every teacher's first priority should be to get the students away from the danger. Engaging a shooter will only put the students in more danger, writes Clint. That's his thought there. So again, we can talk about teachers with guns. I'd like to ask you, though, do you think that our federal government is protecting us enough against right-wing violence, going back to the days of Timothy McVeigh and the Oklahoma City bombing, and then throughout all the shootings by right-wing people? The synagogue shooting 6 months ago in Pittsburgh, done by somebody who was a far right-wing person. And again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. And we'll take these calls in just a moment. Frank Knox is our phone producer today. And this guy, Ernest, is going to be arraigned on Wednesday. We'll find out more about him. But certainly was posting things online about his love for right-wing fanatics, including Adolf Hitler and the New Zealand mosque shooter. Let's go to Steve in Tampa. Steve, you're on. Is our federal government doing enough, do you think?
Probably not, but what I did want to call about pertaining to the synagogue thing is they're saying on talk radio about how Trump called up and gave his condolences and all that and how, you know, good this was and all of that. And what I came away from all of it is the whole Kabod movement is it is terribly right-wing itself. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those people voted for Trump, you know?
It is. I think Chabad is part of the conservative wing of the Jewish faith. But you
that
can't...
That was Meir Kahana's people.
Well, no. Meir Kahana was even further to the right than that.
The Kabod movement. Meir Kahana's people. And
well, Steve, I'm going to have to look that up.
But I'm telling you that is...
But that's still no justification.
Oh, no, I'm not saying it is, but I'm just saying that it's kind of funny that, you know, a right-wing person killed a bunch of right-wing Jewish people.
All right, Steve, thanks.
Right,
thanks for your thoughts.
All
right. Well, again, our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Kevin in Bradenton. Kevin, you're on MNF. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, great show. I think that the government has their hands tied because the effect of all these people that are becoming radicalized online, I do think that the internet is the home of hate speech being spread easily, and there's got to be something that they can do. But I personally don't know what they're going to be able to do because of all the free speech issues. You know, it's a conundrum. I'm really at a loss for even, you know, I know that they can do things, but whether or not they will, I don't see how it's going to happen, and I'm very concerned with it, just like you are.
Yeah, but what if somebody was posting that they liked Adolf Hitler, that they liked the massacre at the mosque in New Zealand, and they've got guns, they've got an AR-15?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that add up to perhaps somebody who at least should get a visit from the FBI?
I agree 100%, but I think that in order to go down that road, they would have to be able to, there's probably so many people that espouse those kind of views that ultimately I just don't think that they're going to dedicate enough resources. As you said, you know, they stopped pursuing some of that, you know, a year ago, and I don't know, I just don't
but see. But isn't this a call to begin to investigate those people who are on the far right, who have guns, that like mass shooters? I mean, shouldn't our federal government begin to investigate these people more so we can prevent these kind of shootings in the future?
Well, I agree. I think that they should, but I don't know what we as people can do to hold our elected officials' feet to the fire.
Well, what about Kevin? Kevin, what about calling your member of Congress right now and saying, hey, look, you know, I'm sure you're investigating left-wing groups. Left-wing groups are being investigated all the time. How about investigating some right-wing groups? Call your U.S. senator, call your member of Congress and say, let's reinstate the investigations into far-right groups in the U.S., the ones that the president put an end to.
I agree. I think I will, because I'm actually more concerned about that than ISIS coming over here and affecting us.
Certainly more people have been killed by right-wing groups in the U.S. than ISIS, yeah.
I will do my best, Rob, and I really appreciate this show. I think that this is something that really needs to come to the light of day. Thank you.
All right, Kevin. Thanks a lot, Kevin in Bradenton. We got an open line, 813-239-9663. Now, here's Simon's take. Simon's one of those frequent callers here at MNF. Simon says this: why does the Democratic Party and progressives use Jews as pawns in these hate crimes? That's Simon's. Do you agree
that Jews are being used as pawns. The mass shooting in New Zealand wasn't Jewish people. It was people of the Islamic faith. But the killer in this case on Sunday hated both Jews and people of the Muslim religion. So, Simon, thanks a lot for your email. We read it on the air, and we're happy to do it. And do you agree or disagree with Simon? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Jarvis in Tampa. Jarvis, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, glad to have you back, Rob.
Thanks, Jarvis.
On the radio. Let me say this to you and your audience. The problem I have with all of this, Rob, is that had this been a Muslim, this would have been called a terrorist act. And see what happened in Sacramento, that was a terrorist act. The problem is that it seems that nobody's life really matters but white people's lives and Jewish people's lives. Because if other people's lives matter, it's more people who are white supremacists doing terrorist acts and never been called a terrorist. These white supremacist groups, they should be on the terrorist list. The second thing, in the state legislature, they're making an anti-Semitic law. If you said something bad about my Jewish brothers and sisters, now you're going to go to jail. But they've been talking bad about black people, about Muslims, and no law be made. That there's no equity and fairness in how we're being treated as a people. And so my point is that as a Muslim, as an African-American, my heart go out to any kind of people that's killed, but people get caught killed in Charleston, South Carolina. That wasn't no terrorist act. That man was a racist. What happened to the Muslim in New Zealand? That man was a racist. Wasn't no terrorist act. And so when you label us as Muslim terrorists, and they have nothing to do with our faith tradition in terms of what Islam is, and then what you do is let these other people get a slide, I don't think that's fair. Thank you.
All right, Jarvis, thanks a lot. Thanks. And I think a lot of people think all these acts are terrorism. Sunday was terrorism. New Zealand was terrorism. Charleston was terrorism. Pittsburgh was terrorism. I think a lot of people think that. 813-239-9663. The question is, does our federal government think that it's a problem? And right now, the agency that was investigating right-wing terrorism has been disbanded in the U.S. And is that the right thing to do? Given the dangerous times that we're in. 813-239-9663. Let's go to Tina in Tampa. Tina, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. I first of all want to say this. I think that if this government was serious about putting a dent in all the bloodshed that's going on by this way, by terrorists, no matter what their belief is, they need to ban assault weapons. They just need to do that. Look at what's happened when Australia banned assault weapons. It dropped this kind of these shootings completely. And New Zealand, look, 2 weeks it took them after that shooting to ban assault weapons. And secondly, do we do enough investigation of right-wing terrorists? That was your question. I'm understanding that was what you're asking. Do we do enough investigation of right-wing groups? I would have to say, I think in as much as we can in this country, because once you start going after people, investigating people because of something they say or write or post on the internet, then you are crossing a really dangerous line about going after people because they're exercising their First Amendment rights. I think that a much better way to approach this problem is get control of the guns in this country. And I think also that there's plenty of, shootings that have gone on. You're making a distinction, if I'm understanding you correctly, between left-wing, you're calling them terrorists, and right-wing groups. Did I hear you?
Yeah, I don't think you heard me right. I'm saying that this, what happened in Pittsburgh, what happened in California yesterday, what happened in Charleston, what happened in New Zealand, they were all terrorist events.
Right. I would agree. They're all terrorist attacks. I think that, and you're saying that there's not enough investigation of the right wing people in particular.
Yeah, that's how I started the show. Yeah.
Well, I would. agree that President Trump shouldn't have disbanded the organization that was investigating them. But I also, you know, want to emphasize that once you start going after a particular group because of something that they're posting, I think you're getting into a dangerous territory there. People could say they're being singled out. I just think that there's a better way for us to approach this as a country and dealing with the so many weapons that we have. All right, thank you.
All right, Tina, thanks a lot. There is an effort in Florida to ban assault weapons, and that effort's going to be on the ballot next year in all likelihood. They're gathering signatures right now. And, you know, I wouldn't go after somebody simply for posting something, an opinion on the Internet. But if they post an opinion in which they're supporting terrorism and they've got assault-style weapons at home, then I think they deserve to have a visit by the FBI to see whether or not they're going to carry out something evil. What do you think? 813-239-9663. Let's go to Trish in Seminole. Hi, Trish. You're on.
Hi. I agree with a lot of what is being said. I don't think they should have disbanded the investigating arm. And anybody that posts stuff like that and puts up a page especially and says, follow my live feed, hello, I think we are remiss to not have eyes on that. There's a lot of indicators in the background of most of the people that have been radicalized in this country that they intended to go in that direction and harm others, and especially of ethnic groups. So that, and ban the assault weapons. Why do we need assault weapons? We don't. They're like lighters looking for a fire to start. So I don't think the populace needs that. I'm not saying take away their right to bear arms. I'm saying if it's a sports weapon, yeah, they can go out and shoot skeet. They can go shoot squirrels. They can do target practice, but there is no need for the population to have assault weapons. Get them out of the hands of the population. And then the third thing I wanted to say, and then I'll take a breath and let you talk, is we are addressing this problem at the same level that it was created. And Einstein said you can't solve a problem at the same level it was created. The government needs to do more to unify the country so that people are not being radicalized, so that children don't go in that direction in the first place and become bullies and later on become school shooters, so that kids that graduate have some way to link into the rest of the population, some kind of civil service that has nothing to do with military, anything, some kind of community way to hook people back together so they see all of us are human beings and have the right to live and not be shot down because we read the Talmud and not the Bible.
All right,
now
Trish.
I'm gonna take my breath.
Trish, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
You're welcome.
All right. So there's Trish's views. Here's John's view. He says, while I was trying to get my daughter into New College here in Florida from a wait list to admission, I was shocked to find out later that New College accepted a person named Derek Black. Derek is the son of Don Black, and Don Black founded the Stormfront Hate Group. I still don't get the logic in that decision, writes John. And John, I think you're going to have to take that up with New College. The Derek Black case is interesting, though, and I've been trying to get him as a guest on this radio show because at New College, Derek went from being a member of the far right to opposing what his dad does. Stormfront essentially is a Nazi, right-wing Nazi website and a right-wing Nazi group. Derek has rejected the philosophy of his dad and is now going around the country and writing op-eds in newspapers opposing hate groups. So I'm trying to get Derek on since he was a student at New College, and maybe we'll get him on soon. We've got an open line, 813-239-9663, and I'm asking the question, should our government be doing more to stop or at least investigate right-wing hate that's posted online on some of those websites that I mentioned at the top of the show? Let's go to Art in Largo. Art, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, Rob. Rob, can I comment on the comment that the Zionists from Lakeland made?
On Simon, sure. Yeah, I read Simon's email. He says that the Democrats and progressives are using Jews as pawns every time there's a shooting of Jewish people. So.
Okay, my comment is this. He despises the Democrat Party, and especially the progressives, because it in no way can live up to the right wing's pro-Israel stance. He is a Trump loyalist because his primary concern is for Israel's security. His secondary concern would be for America's security. That's all I have to say, Rob, and welcome back.
All right. Thanks, Art. You can write into the studio here at dj@wmnf.org if you want to agree or disagree with anything you've heard here so far. And, Art, thank you for that. Let's go to Sean in Clearwater. Sean, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. I hear you making a distinction that this is a terrorist act. I'm trying to figure out what would be, you know, where's the significance in calling this a terrorist act or just some crazy person going and shooting up a synagogue trying to kill people, just a murderer. Where's the I'm just trying to figure out what is a terrorist.
A terrorist act is to attack a group of people based on a political philosophy in order to try to change the politics of the country. And what this guy was doing, and I'm pretty sure all these people are doing, is that they're trying to show that they're courageous enough to attack part of the widely, let's use the term loosely, progressive community in order to start a war between either religions or ethnic groups or political groups. They want to start a civil war in the U.S., and that's what they're doing. They want to start a civil war around the U.S. and around the world, rather. And so that's what why I call it a terrorist group. It wasn't just a lone crazy who just came up with these ideas on his own. He was part of a community on 8chan and even boasted that he was going to go out and score some big numbers. And he was acting because he thought he had a lot of friends out there, and he was going to be the first one to try to create this civil war, spark this civil war.
And so do you think that that is possible? Do you think America, it would be feasible for a civil war to happen between these groups?
I think if hate takes over, yes. But I think that's the thing that we've got to stop. We've got to stop the hate. If hate takes over, we'll have a civil war. But those of us that don't believe in hate, those of us that want everybody to kind of work together here in the U.S., you know, we've got to stand up against that. We've got to stand up against the hate and the divisions within our country.
So, do you think that there will always be fringes? And, you know, people.
Well, I think the fringes are getting bigger, Sean. That's my concern, and that's why we're talking about it on the radio. I think the fringes now have carried out a string of terror groups and then big demonstrations in places like Charlotte. Charlottesville, Virginia.
This has always been going on.
We haven't seen this kind of spate. We haven't seen this spate of right wing violence like this. I mean, it's on the increase, and that's the danger. And ignoring it is part of the problem.
All right. Well, what about, you know, back in the 30s and 40s with the right wing and then Anthony McVeigh several years ago blowing up buildings? I mean, we've always had these people.
I don't buy it. These people have been around, but it's growing. And that's the danger. And ignoring it is part of the problem. McVeigh certainly was part of the problem. In the last few years, we've had, you know, just a few months ago, we had the synagogue shooting. And a right-wing guy was shooting up a synagogue, killed 11 people, wounded many more. This is a growing danger in our country, and I'm not going to sit back and just ignore it. Sean, thanks a lot. Let's go to Cynthia in Spring Hill. Cynthia, we have 30 seconds.
Hi. I wanted to comment on what Trisha said earlier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please do. We just have 20 seconds.
I believe that something should be done when they're younger, when children, they should be involved in the community before they gather up all this hate. That's what we should be doing as a country. So making people feel accepted here and so they don't garner all this hate and want to kill people.
Yeah, somehow we've got to do that. Apparently he was part of a community. Cynthia, thanks a lot. He was part of his church community, but I don't think that that helped very much. Well, if you want to comment about today's show, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Stay tuned now. Sean Kinnan is coming up next. He's going to be talking about that sanctuary city legislation that passed in Tallahassee. He's going to hear a good debate about that in the next hour. You'll hear a good debate about that in the next hour. Thanks to Frank Knox. He was our phone producer today. I'm